The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck. I'm along with my coworker, the world's biggest Swifty, Jordan Bianchi. We are
You owe me an apology, by the way.
We'll get to that. We are motorsports writers for The Athletic. I'm here at Dover Motor Speedway. The first time I've been back here since SMI bought it. I believe it's the first time I've been back. My first Dover race in 5 years. And came down to the very last laps. And we had some air blocking, which is the newest thing going on these last few years to decide the race once again. But Jordan, you know, what'd you think? How are you doing today?
I'm well, looking forward to always chatting with you. This is my favorite 2 hours of the week. I thought it was a pretty typical Dover race, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Like I think Dover's been pretty good the last few years, and we saw some good racing. We saw a lot of green flag passes for, you know, at least during the first half of the race. Second half kind of settled down a little bit, but I don't have an issue with this. And I'm curious, it seems like this is going to be the topic du jour this week, right? Like the air blocking and, you know, and how do you curb it and that kind of thing. And it's going to be interesting to see where everybody kind of falls on the spectrum on this. And I'm still trying to, I heard Chris Gabehart's answer and I'm kind of agreeing with him of like, I really haven't thought about it a lot, so I don't know what my answer is going to be on this. But I mean, it would seem to be, and you've asked the question about the rearview mirror and, or the rearview camera. And is that too much of a tool? And I think that's a conversation worth having of like, do you really need that? Is it worth having? And is it a way, it seems like a very small thing you could do. And if that improves the racing or it does, it makes it harder to block. It seems like a simple, straightforward solution.
So let's back up here to sort of frame this conversation, right? So Denny Hamlin is leading. Kyle Larson thinks, you know what? I can track him down. I think I have time to do it. And indeed, he does track Denny Hamlin down for the lead. Then Denny obviously knows, okay, well, I'm going to do what every driver is doing these days in any sort of sizable track at all. And that is to try to take his air away and or shut his air off, as Kyle Larson put it after the race. So, and Larson says, listen, by the way, this is not Larson complaining about this. He was citing his own success in using these techniques in talking about this. So like talking about, hey, at Vegas, when I won, I just took Reddick's air away and I won that race. And then he said, you know, the stage that I won earlier today, you know, I just kind of backed everybody up to me. I could see where Bowman was going and I just made sure he stayed behind me and took his air away. And it's a technique that everybody uses now, right? It has become, I asked Denny, when did this start exactly? He said it was when the 550 package started on intermediate tracks. Drivers started to figure it out. And it is obviously the tool. You heard Kyle Busch say this weekend that this car is better as a defensive tool than an offensive tool. And I hadn't heard it. You know, you hear people talk about that, but put it in those terms, that was really interesting to me that, you know, and Larson kept saying it's easy, kept saying easy. He used that word multiple times to take someone's air away. So obviously Denny did that as anybody would, right? I mean,
he can't bolt them.
No, of course not. That is what you do to win races now.
You've got a tool in your toolbox. You're going to use it.
Yes. And the drivers who win races are good at air blocking. They have to be because again, like that's how, and so, and it's not, as Larson was saying, you know, it's not that you take someone's specific line away and run exactly where they want to run. It's that, and they've laid it out very well on Fox, I think, where it's that gradual kind of move up the track. And you are taking all that air away. And for whatever reason, the physics of it, keep that car behind you. Denny has said multiple times on Actions Detrimental, his post-race press conference today, you know, this is why this car does well when there's multiple lanes, because the second place driver can really, you know, do something and you know, have an option to go somewhere. When there's only one place to go, it's pretty hard to pass the car in front of you. So that's what happened. So anyway, with the camera conversation that you're talking about, Larson said toward the end of his interview on Pit Road, you know, maybe it would help if we took the cameras out, because Larson was saying, I use the camera and all I do is I'm looking at the camera and I'm just seeing where this guy's going. Okay, I go this way. I see where he's going. Okay, I go this way. But Hamlin kind of refuted that after the race and said, well, I don't really use it because I keep my eyes on the road because stuff happens so much here. And
10-2, baby. Eyes forward, 10-2.
10-2, yeah. He said spotters would tell you anyway, essentially. Yeah. But I understand what Larson's saying, because, you know, if you're making something too easy for the leader to just defend, we want to see, you know, some good racing at the end, not always decided by air, just, you know, taking someone's air away. But again, just to wrap this up, this part, like Larson said, this is why execution is emphasized. Execution on restarts, execution on your pit stops. This is why that all that stuff matters, and your whole team going into it. That's why, you know, the track position conversation is there. So this is the reality. This is how this race was decided, and it's not a surprise. But you know, at least you're kind of like, well, what's going to happen here? Oh, and then you're like, yeah, the air again.
But I give Denny credit for executing, though, because a lot of drivers in that spot would not. You have to be perfect, right? I mean, you have to hit your marks. You can't do anything that is good. If you get loose or you overdrive, you open up that door for Larson. You can block all you want to, but once he gets, you know, a wheel underneath you or above you, he's going to have an opportunity to pass you. Then he executed in that end, and that to me was what made that battle great. It wasn't, you know, I understand the air blocking is a thing, but to see these guys go at it, though, it's still to me is a showcase, because that's what it was. It's two of NASCAR's best. And when I look at this race as a whole, to me, I thought this was kind of a microcosm of the year, of like, you looked at the players in this mix, and it was Larson and Hamlin, who we know are going to be the, you know, in factors throughout. Martin Truex Jr. was up there, and it's like Martin Truex Jr. was a factor, but he didn't win the race, which has kind of been a story as well this year. William Byron was really strong as well at times until he got back in the pack and then had his issues. It just seems like this was an opportunity in a race where you kind of had everybody kind of show out a little bit of the guys that we think are the contenders, quote unquote, right? And that was really how this played out to me.
I totally agree. And really in Dover in general, consistently really has become, I mean, you could say not just become, but a long time now, the place where really the elite mm-hmm. come out. I mean, if you want like sort of one of the truest tests in NASCAR of who is really good, you look at how these Dover races shake out. You know, I don't know if Bowman will make the Hall of Fame someday, but aside from Bowman's win a few years ago, if you look at the list of winners, it's Hall of Famer after Hall of Famer or future Hall of Famer. And so this just isn't a place for upsets or underdogs, really. You know, you can get a good result, like, you know, Noah Gragson, hey, Daniel Hemric, they caught the caution at the exact right time, right? And they mm-hmm. were able to somewhat hang on to enough track position at the end there, and get a good finish out of it. But it's not really, you know, for an underdog to win this race and just go out and, I mean, it's just doesn't really happen, right? So, yeah, you are seeing the best go at it. And I think, look, Larson and Denny, they've had some great battles over the years. And we know about, you know, their friendly rivalry, sometimes not as friendly.
It was a year ago next weekend, by the way.
Oh, the Kansas one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a one chapter.
Kind of all, yeah.
So, you know, look, I think we got to get to the point, and let me back up. I don't want to say we have to get to the point as a, like you, the listeners, have to get to the point to accept this. But I personally have to get to the point where instead of getting myself so frustrated every week, you know, like Kyle Busch, you know, after the race too, this air blocking, damn air blocking kind of thing, right? Like he's so frustrated. I get that. But it's not going to change, and it's here to stay. I mean, Chris Gabehart, to your point, you referenced his comments in the post-race presser. he said it doesn't, he said, you know, look, you know, this started 5 years ago or whatever. But if you look back at it, he said, if drivers knew how to do this 10 years ago, it would have worked. This is one of those things where once people have learned it and, you know, again, understand physics and what to do, he doesn't really think it's about this car as much as the bottom line is people know how to take the air away and keep people behind them now. So even if you had a different car, these guys are so good at it. I don't know if that's going to change. So, you know, sort of the options are, okay, you know, Kansas coming up again next week. It's probably going to be a battle for the lead. Somebody's going to air block, just like in Vegas, right? So is it, you know, are we going to get fired up and be like, this is, I can't believe this racing has turned into this. It's all about the air, you know? Maybe it's just like you just accept it and say, well, that guy got the track position or he got a better restart or he got a better pit stop or whatever it is. And just, yeah, I mean, if it's especially if it's a veteran guy who knows how to do it, I don't know. It's just, but I feel like I have to accept it at this point rather than rail against it.
Well, I just want, on behalf of all of the loyal Teardown listeners who we are very grateful for, please don't ever stop ranting. We want you to be, we want you to be maniacal and off the rails and, you know, let your blood boil and any little trivial thing that really in the grand scheme of things is not a big deal, you turn into like this big, you know, exaggerated thing. Please don't ever stop. Oh, don't. Yeah. Yeah. Fake shock. Please do that. So please don't ever stop that. And it's interesting because I've been thinking about this a lot because obviously we always talk about quality, right? It seems like we talk about quality racing a lot, right? And this and that, whatever. But at the end of the day, it still feels like the best drivers are still up there. It doesn't matter, right? You know, to me, it's like you still have the Dennys and the Larsons and the Byrons and the Truexes. And like you still have these guys who are insanely talented. And it's not like a major super talented driver all of a sudden is like falling off the cliff, right? You know, I mean, maybe respectfully, maybe you could say Kyle Busch has struggled with this car, but even then he's like, he's still winning races. He's still in the mix, you know, and that can be attributed to other factors. So at the end of the day, it still feels like their ability still matters. And regardless of what rules package you put out there or this or that, these guys, the cream is still going to end up inevitably rising to the top.
I mean, ultimately, look, it's one of those things where it does look good on TV. It's a good battle, right? Like you know, you're like, oh, what's going to happen? And as you said, it's, you know, it's the fastest cars up there. So it's not like you're dealing with some fluke people. I mean, it's auto racing. So, you know, I think if, again, and as you started saying too, I mean, for Dover, I think it was on the positive side of some Dover races. I mean, there's been some horrible Dover races, but the last few years have been, you know, with the next gen car been decent for sure. And this was fine. I mean, I'd almost say perfectly acceptable to your standard there, but, you know, I'm not sure what you're expecting at Dover. If you thought it was going to be something else than that, I mean, you had some long green flag runs, you had some good restarts, you know, you had guys, you know, the track did widen out. I mean, Alex Bowman was making some great moves on the top side. You had some good battles for the lead. You know, there was multiple times when people passed under green on the track. It wasn't like all the, you know, there's been Dover races where like, oh, there's no, the only lead changes were on pit road or something, right? So this wasn't that. So again, you know, I think that's what Dover, this is what Dover is. I tell you what too. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of people that came out today to see it. Good vibe, good atmosphere. Nice sunny day. I mean, Dover, poor Dover. I think this is their first normal race in 5 years because 2020 was pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. Then you had 2021. They had a doubleheader in 2020, I think, right?
Yeah, that was right, in August.
Then you have 2021, which I think was only half attendance allowed or something like that, you know, partial, whatever. Mm-hmm. Then you had 2022 and 2023 both rained out.
Mm-hmm.
So Now you had a normal Dover race for the first time in a while. And yes, they've taken out seats, but it was a pretty good crowd. It was a pretty, pretty strong crowd. There was traffic today. The fan zone was full. So look, people come out to see it. It's a great market. I think it doesn't need two races, but it's what you're going to get. And I think it was, everything was fine to me.
I don't know. But, and this is the argument for why a lot of tracks probably just deserve one race, right? Of like, it feels like a big deal. Like, we're only going to Dover once a year. If you're a fan of that area and you want to watch, like, I got to go to this race. And it, you know, for a track that has long struggled with attendance, like, that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. And that's a great thing. And now it's a big deal. And I think competitors in general probably look at Dover too and say, oh man, we got back to Dover again. It's such a slog there. It's like, no, it's like, we're going to Dover. It's one race a year. It means something there. It's this good opportunity. And so there's just, it's a different vibe that you create. And it's something we have seen happen at Pocono. We've seen it happen at Michigan. And those tracks have done really well in that environment with just a single day. And I think that's something that a lot of other tracks probably could follow.
So Denny wins race 54 of his career. He already has three this year. He had three all of last year. He had two each the year before, the 2 years before. He's obviously trying to pile up the wins. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, he said 60, right? Like that's a goal, which he's now six away. But he also said today that he wants to get firmly into the all-time top 10 of the all-time wins list. So I believe today got him to 12th, a tie for 12th. Let me pull this up here. Yeah, so he's now tied with Lee Petty for 12th. Next one, if he wins one more, he's tied with Rusty Wallace for 11th. Mm-hmm. So Harvick is at 60, and that's 10th. So what he's saying is, he doesn't just today, he said, you know, he would prefer not to just get to 60, but to get himself, you know, some more wins up in there. As far as active drivers, I mean, Kyle Busch has 63. So, you know, that's not somebody coming from behind him. The next active drivers, let's say, because they're close on the wins list, you've got Keselowski, 35, Truex, 34. Well, I mean, they're almost 20 behind Denny, so they're not going to win that many more times. Logano, I think, is a threat. Although he's obviously, you know, had some off years, but he has 32 wins. So he's now 22 behind Denny, but, you know, he could get there. He's got a long time. Then you have guys like, you know, Larson has 24, people like that, right? So, you know, if he can get himself up there, as he has said, and he gets into top 10 all time and wins pretty comfortably, even without a championship, as he's been saying, it's pretty good, right? Like, you're one of the legends without the title. It doesn't, I'm going to say not to, doesn't matter, but you're still
say it.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter as much, right? Like, if you don't have it.
I mean, but it's also, we have talked about this, like, you recalibrate championships, I think, in this format where, you know, does winning a championship in this format carry the same prestige as it did in the previous playoff format, or in the era where, you know, race one through whatever was how you won the championship? I don't know. I am the belief that I think final four appearances eventually are going to be something that you start looking at and saying, like, that is a statistic. You know, 10 years down the road, you're going to say, hey, wait a second, that matters. This guy had X number of final four appearances, because that really is going to exhibit a consistency and an ability to perform in the playoffs, and also factors in, I think, in some moments, regular season, you know, what you do during the regular season as well. I'm looking at it, and we had Hamlin last year 18th in our top 75 NASCAR Cup Series driver poll that we did. The highest that a panelist had him was 11th. The lowest that a panelist had was 39th, which is surprising to me. I mean,
we had some panelists that maybe didn't like Denny, though.
But. Yeah, I yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm not going to dive into that one. I know where those votes came from. I have a hunch. Let's just say. But you look at it, and I, you know, when we did that panel a year ago, to me, like, what jumped out to me was Kevin Harvick's career. like what he was able to accomplish and the races that he won and the big races that he won. And it was like, this guy is top 10. Like he's only got quote unquote one championship, but I don't think that necessarily matters. I think he's got a championship, but he's got all these big races, big moments as well. You start looking at Hamlin's career and he starts racking up those wins. You look at, he's won Daytona three times. He's won the Southern 500 a handful of times. He's won the Coca-Cola 600 before. Has not yet won the Brickyard 400 though. That's been off the oval. So it's dings, you know, it's not, you know, it's hard to do that, but they're going back to the oval this year. And it's like, if you can get that major, like all of a sudden you're looking at that going, man, that, how is that not a top 10 career, you know, in the modern era, in this day and age, and of how hard it is to win races and to do it as long as he has. And I think that's something that's overlooked too. He's only gone 1 year without a win. And that was, you know, in 18, like that's a pretty remarkable career. Even without the championship, I don't know. I'd have a hard time not putting him in the top 10.
Here's the thing. So again, you know, we're sitting here right now saying he's got 54 wins. I mean, the most he's won in a season is 8. You know, there's 25 races left this year. Can he win? How many more can he win in these next 25 races? Because right now he's a threat every week, right? And I know things come.
I don't know, 3-4 just to be like, I'm trying to be. I mean, he could win a lot, but I'm just trying to be realistic in this, right? I mean, typically, yeah. You know, drivers typically, we usually have one driver that wins about 7 races a year. So let's say he's that driver. So he wins 4 more times and he gives him 7 wins.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, though, like you almost think based on the way they're running, if they win 4 more times in the next 25 races, they missed it. Like that is disappointing.
Oh, yeah.
And that means they probably didn't win the championship again, right? Because I mean, this is, you know, we talk about how hard it is in this era, right? To like win lots of races because everything is so even now. But we're also seeing that at least these two organizations, which have won every non-super speedway race this year, and then even the top drivers in those organizations. So like, I mean, you look at Christopher Bell, can't get out of, you know, the bad luck right now. Ty Gibbs had a hot start, but hasn't quite had the success. I mean, he had a 10th place run today. And then, you know, you look at like the Hendrick cars, right? Like Chase pops up there and, you know, he was fifth today, but you know, he's up and down. Bowman shows spurts. I mean, he had great day going and end up finishing 8th. Byron, they had that bad pit stop today.
He was fast today before that.
Right. But like once you get in traffic.
Yeah, it's done.
That's it. So, you know, you see like you take these two organizations with 8 drivers, Hendrick and Gibbs, and you go, all right, the winner each week is probably going to come from there. It's almost an upset at this point if it doesn't. Even if a 23-11 driver or something wins next week at Kansas, it's like, well, you're still thinking it's going to be Hendrick or Gibbs, right? And then you take those 8 and you go, maybe there's 4 that I would think are really going to run for the win. And that's sort of what it's been, right? So if that continues this way and you go to most of the sort of normal races with 4, maybe 5 guys who might win it, you would think that Denny in particular, his team, Larson's team, Byron, and Truex, I mean, they're all going to win more. Right. So I'm not saying we could see a 10 win season, but
the potential's there.
It's possible at this point, right? Yeah.
Like absolutely. Like why? I mean, if you look at what they've done and the consistency, how consistently fast their race cars are. I mean, it's certainly something to consider. And what remarkable to me about a season is he's got 3 top 5 finishes this year. They're all wins. Like it's almost win or bust. And it's not because like they're bad and they're off. They just had, you know, Texas, they crashed, you know, Talladega, they get caught up in something. It's just like those kind of things are happening, but there really isn't a style of racetrack that they go to now. Dirt's gone. where you don't think that Denny has a chance. Like, he and Chris Gabart made the comment afterwards of like, he's really made the, he's put the work in, continues to put the work in to become better. And like, road course is a perfect example of that. Like, going into last year, he didn't feel like he was great on road courses to the level he needed to be at. And he put the time in and he goes there and he won what, 2 or 3 poles last year in those races and was competitive. So, there just isn't a track right now that you're going to and say that they can't win. And then you start looking at the schedule and you go, well, you got Kansas, you got two races at Kansas still. You've got two races at Darlington. Throw the super speedways in the mix. You just look at this and you're like seriously, pick out a racetrack where you look at it and go, he's not going to be a factor. Like, you'd be hard pressed to do that.
Right. For sure. I mean, Pocono, Indy,
yeah,
you know, all the short tracks, whatever. Right. But like, you could say insert Kyle Larson's name in this. Yeah, and you could be saying the exact same thing. So
the one thing that's different though, too, about the 11 team this year, though, is the pit crew and yes, what's happening yes, and not right. happening on pit road.
I'm glad you brought that up.
The difference yeah. because for so long we have talked about, oh man, Denny's got this win. Something would happen on pit road. He would speed or the pit crew would have a mistake. He's not speeding on pit road with the same, the volume, and the pit crew routinely whips out just blazing fast pit stops. Did it again today, got him into the lead for the first time. And from there, he pretty much held serve the rest of the way, you know? And it's like, that's the big difference for me overall with the 11 team is what they are doing on pit road and how fast they are and how mistake free they are.
And I think that's a very valid point, especially when you talk about how we open the show with the air blocking, right? And how crucial it is to be able to control that as the leader, and be up front and be able to make those defensive moves that Kyle Busch says this car is that's its greatest tool, being on defense. Mm-hmm. Defense wins championships. You know?
Yeah.
So apparently that's gonna be the thing in NASCAR now too. Or has been. I just think it's being articulated a little bit better as this becomes, it goes on and on, right? Because it's not just like a trend now. It's not just a package. It's not this or that. It's like, this is how the evolution mm-hmm. has changed. And so, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I know a lot of people are going, I hate that, but you know, I just, it's part of the game. You just have to recognize it at this point. Cause I don't, it's not like I don't think they're going to do anything about it. Nothing's going to be,
yeah,
I think it's going to happen. So the question is, does that make a good race like today? I got my people to tweet up telling me, number one today, that your straw poll is such blatant cheating. Everybody's on my side about that. Had a big group of people, lovely people, all my friends in Delaware, brought it up on their own. I didn't say, what do you guys think Jordan's cheating? They said, just to let you know, Jeff, Jordan's cheating and everybody knows it. That's fine. I mean, I'm just telling you what the people said. I'm not saying that. I would never say that.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, everybody noticing that I have, we have a banner. We're on our,
what
our
the heck? This is like, where did this come from? And why are we doing this now?
We have a banner that says, do you think Jordan's cheating on our live stream? This
you is check your mention. You look at your mentions and see what people are saying on social media before you make a guess. Right, and you literally say that.
You say you're triggered. I'm sorry that this upset you. I didn't mean to go down this road. But yes, anyway, you people did. Are noticing that people are noticing that I, since you started your straw poll, just keep piling up the wins.
No, that is inaccurate. I've been doing the straw poll for a while. Okay, and it helped me, it was a tool in my toolbox that I used, like blocking, to win the championship a year ago. So it's all good. Okay. So yeah, I'm on a cold spell right now. It happened. Same thing happened last year as well. You go in heaters. You ever notice how this goes? Like, one of us will win for like 3, 4, 5 weeks, and then the other person comes back. It's like, this is just how it goes.
I don't think so.
It is too. Go back. Whatever. I'm not.
No, not this year, because the karma is on my side. So Big Joe Wall texted me the results. I've now pulled into the lead, everybody. I was down 4-1 and I'm up 6-5. So you had won 4 in a row.
Whatever.
So I have to guess first. That's okay. That's okay though. I'm okay with that. So there's a poll on now on our live stream too. Was Dover a good race? I wish we could go into the stream and see what people are saying, but I will guess. Okay. So I don't think people are going to love it. So I'm not sure it's going to get quite up to 70, but I also don't think it was a bad race. I mean, Denny's going to knock it down a few points. The aero blocking, all that stuff. People just in general don't love it. I don't think it's going to be that bad though. So I'm going to say, I'm really worried about trying to, all right, I'll just say 64%.
What do you guess. Think?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything all the reasons you had. I wasn't offended by this. Like, it was fine. What I would like to seen better. I mean, could there have been a little bit better. Yeah. Like, I would have liked to see more tire fall off. Like, that was the difference for me. It's like, you didn't see that over a course of a green flag run, where it didn't really feel like guys had to manage their tires that much, you know, and that's a recurring theme. And I don't think that's a next gen car problem per se. It seems like that's kind of been the case at Dover for a while. Man, that was a good number. Man, that was a good guess. I'm going to say 62, but I don't feel good about it. Oh. Go ahead.
Well, we just got a text. You haven't checked your text. We got a text.
No, I can't check my text. I record on my phone, and I feel very blind running through this. It's
just
not
as we
easy.
Said this, because Travis Rockhold, Denny's producer from Actions Detrimental, is watching this, and he said it's not cheating if you don't ask for it. So he said that he had a friend tell me 77%, and Travis thinks 82. So I was really nervous that you were going to see Travis's text and go above my 64, but you've locked in at 62. So
that's fine. I'll take 62. Whatever. I don't care. It's a stupid poll anyway.
Oh, you went from this is a great, oh, I've got the pulse of the fans to
this is dumb. This is a waste of time.
All right. So what else is there to talk about from this? By the way, so just cleaning up some things. Truex, for instance, did say after the race that he thought he had a winning car, but that contact that he had
with
Bowman on the restart that crumpled his nose, that did play a factor. So, you know, he was bummed about that. But as you said, you know, it's another third place run for him, and he's still second in points. Larson is still the points leader by 15 over Truex. Denny is up to fourth in points, but Denny, obviously, had he not sort of gone forward at Texas and lost however many points he lost, that would get him much closer to the conversation. But anyway, yeah, Kyle Busch, I mean, that was
great.
He needed
race,
to run like that. Yeah, I mean,
great race.
He called it a normal race, I think. Just a
no issues on pit road, fast to qualifying, no problems. Leaves with a top five finish. Like, they needed that in the worst way. Big day for him. Also, Stuart Haas Racing, again, like really, really, Noah Gregson, just, and I know that caution at the end helped, and there's no discounting that. But even before that, like, he and Briscoe were running really in the top 10 or thereabouts for a good chunk of this day. And to leave there with a great finish, like, with that 10 team and is doing is incredible. And Drew Blickensdorf doesn't get enough credit, I think, sometimes for being one of those top crew chiefs in the garage, but he is, again, putting his team consistently in position. Noah is driving really, really smart. Like, you haven't had a race really this year, too, or at least too many of them, where you're like, Noah, what are you doing and making mistakes? Like, this is a driver who is really kind of coming into his own and really showcasing himself in a big way. And Chase Briscoe, I mean, he's in a playoff spot right now. Like, no one thought that before the year. You know, and that he just continues knocking these finishes out. So kudos to Stuart Haas Racing, because I know we both have been critical of them. We both had our expectations were very low for them this year, but they are certainly impressing through 11 races.
Yeah, I mean, I think Briscoe in particular being able to, especially with when you take into account Ford's struggles as well.
Yes, great point.
You know, the fact that he's been able, I mean, Chase Briscoe is higher in points than Joey Logano right now, and both RFK drivers. So you know, that's huge. And yeah, Gregson, I think Dustin Albino tweeted that this is the first time in his Cup career that he has back-to-back top tens. The Kyle Busch thing you mentioned earlier, I mean, not only did he need this top five, but if you look at Kyle Busch's finishes, he finished third at Atlanta at Super Speedway, right? But like in the photo finish. But aside from that photo finish cars moment at Atlanta, Kyle Busch had not had a finish better than ninth all season. Mm-hmm. All season. His best finish was ninth aside from that. So to finish fourth today, you know, that was definitely important for them. I think it's still a little bit too early to start talking points and stuff, but this is 11 races down.
I don't think it is, man.
It's a 26 race regular season. So, I mean, 2 weeks from now,
we're almost halfway. Like,
yeah, it's halfway through the regular season. So,
and to that point, like, I look at like a Bubba Wallace, right? I mean, you know, a few weeks ago, he was really well positioned above the cut line, and now he's provisionally out of the playoffs, you know, and that's how quickly this can change. And, you know, the good thing is, or he's going to a track at Kansas where he's got a really good opportunity to get healthy, but you just don't know. And I don't think it's too early to talk about points at all, because you're starting to kind of shake this out a little bit. And the longer Ford goes with their issues and, you know, their lack of speed consistently across the board, like how do you assess RFK? Like do you one or both of those drivers miss at the playoffs? Logano's flirting, you know, with the playoff line. And again, Penske, it's something we've talked about too many times this year. They have just been split, where they've got one guy running in the top 10, whether it's Logano or Blaney, and then the other two guys are running, you know, back half of the top, you know, 15 or so, back half of the top 20. It's just been a struggle for them. And, like, where are they in this? So you start looking at this, and you really are starting to kind of get a sense of, okay, who's in a good spot here, and who is getting in a position where, man, like, I don't want to say it's obviously not panic time, but, you know, you start looking at this going, we can't be digging ourselves too big of a hole here. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to climb out of it.
Yeah, I mean, 2 weeks ago, Bubba was ninth in points after he had four straight top 15s. And he crashes at Talladega and crashes at Dover. Although, again, you know, today it's, you could say he's back there with the squirrels, but it was a restart. Zane Smith appeared to make contact with them. And
tough weekend, you know, for Zane.
Yeah, a tough season.
Yeah,
tough season for Zane. I mean, but, and then last week, obviously at Talladega, you know, John Hunter has the little thing where they're running
mm-hmm.
in the single file line, and Bubba's suddenly taken out. So, you know, I know you'll be like, oh man, it's like, oh, this is not good. He's fallen to 15th in points, but he's only gotten 7 points total the last 2 weeks. And he mm-hmm. was up to ninth before that. So, I think he was
50 points to the good or thereabouts on the
really?
Playoff.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, it can happen fast still.
Yeah. But like RFK's, you know, Brad, yeah, Brad has been able to kind of lift that team and elevate that team to better finishes than we thought they otherwise deserve. But, you know, you have a day like today and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, like he's in trouble and mm-hmm. he hasn't been able to win. And then you look back and you're like, you know, if you don't have speed and the Ford car isn't getting better, which it doesn't appear it is, and the stranglehold that Hendrick and Gibbs have on victory lane continues, like, good luck, because you're going to be in for it this summer.
So, Jordan, what do you do at this point if you're Ford? You just went through the whole process of a new car. So you can't have another new car. You can't really go to NASCAR and sort of be like, you need to give us something, right? Because they just gave them this, like, you know, 11 races ago, right? Like, this is a brand new thing. They went to the wind tunnel. They got it to where they wanted it to be. This was their design. So what is there to be done at this point? I mean,
I don't panic. Honestly, I don't. And I use the last 2 years as an example of that, where let's go back last year. We talked so much about Ford was struggling intermediate racetracks and, you know, and it looked like they were well behind and all you can do is keep making incremental gains and keep working on it. And then, by the way, Blaney goes to the Coca-Cola 600 and wins a race that no one thought he was going to do. because Ford doesn't run well in intermediate track, somehow wins that race. And even then, after that, it's like Ford still was having some issues. But what they have done in the playoffs, like, you can't be ignored. And so I look at the last 2 years and say, we have been struggling. We have been well behind Chevy and Toyota. But when it mattered the most, our process, our pathway to the championship has worked. We just got to keep doing that. It sucks. But I don't know what else you can do, because everything you mentioned, you can't go to NASCAR. You can't really make changes with it. You just have to have your engineers and your crew chiefs continue to work on this and find this. And you hope that you hit on something, because that's what happened. You know, 2 years ago, Logano had a test at Homestead and I think it was a tire test at Homestead that ended up being the difference in getting him direction when they needed it on a mile and a half racetrack. Then he wins at Las Vegas, gets himself in the championship four. Like Blaney last year as well, you know, wins Talladega Super Speedway, where Ford is always strong at. Goes to Martinsville, where if you have deficiencies, they're masked a little bit more. So, and wins there. So it's really easy to be doom and gloom and be like, oh my goodness, Chicken Little and the sky is falling. We're never going to win. Except I get it. But I just think you stay the course, because it's proven that if you do that and you keep making you keep finding things to fine tune, your season is recoverable.
Jordan, I haven't talked to you about this at all. So if you don't feel like you know enough, or you haven't, you know, watched it all this week, we could just skip it. Do you want to talk about the IndyCar? Have you followed that, the whole cheating scandal with Joseph Newgarden, Penske, all that stuff? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Can't miss it. I mean, so it was wild.
Was Joseph Newgarden purposefully cheating?
I mean, it's hard to say that he wasn't, right? Because I read Colton Herta's comments, and I thought Colton Herta had the best response to that is, like, you look at the video from St. Petersburg on the restarts, and he's like, that, you know, Joseph is blowing by us. It's like either Chevrolet hit something on their engine package and for restarts, or there's something more nefarious going on there. And the comment that he had about, hey, we go over, and listen, I'm not as familiar with IndyCar's procedures and how they do the driver meetings and stuff, so I may be talking out of turn here a little bit, but his comments were like, we go over this stuff in the rules, you know, the drivers meeting. We know drivers know when you can and cannot use it. It hasn't changed. There hasn't been a rule change, that kind of thing. So, like, taking that into account, it's hard not to say that, like, he didn't know about it, or maybe he didn't have an idea, maybe an inkling. Like, it's hard not to think that. And it's unfortunate, but that is what it is. It's a black eye for IndyCar for a lot of reasons. And especially when you've got your series poster boy, Indy 500 champion, multi-time series champion, and with the most famous team caught up in this, like, it's bad. And it doesn't feel like this is over, to be honest with you. Like, there could be more fallout from this.
So let me just try to do a quick summary for those of you who may not have been following it or paid attention. Joseph Newgarden won the St. Petersburg Grand Prix, which was like over a month ago.
Yeah.
And Scott McLaughlin, his teammate from Penske, finished third. They were disqualified this week after the Long Beach race because it was discovered that they had been using push to pass, which is IndyCar's sort of answer to DRS, I guess, in F1, right? Like, it gives them a 50 horsepower boost. They have a certain amount that they can use per race, but they're not allowed to use it on restarts. And the Penske drivers had used it on restarts, not willpower though, but the other two had, Newgarden specifically. And the reason they were allowed to do that, or physically allowed to do that, was because there was a software code inserted into their system, apparently during testing, and then it was not taken out, which Penske, being the Penske Perfect details, all that stuff, seems to be quite the oversight, right? Number one. Number two, Newgarden did use it and said he used it and knew he felt it, but then comes out in the press conference and says, well, I know this is hard to believe, but I really thought it was a rule change. I really did, because in their exhibition race, I believe they were allowed to do it at thermal, right?
Sure.
So he had really, he said we had talked ourselves into thinking that it was a rule change. He said, I know it's not believable. I know it doesn't sound like that. So I'm probably in the minority on this, but after watching his press conference, I actually believe him.
Yeah.
I actually do, because here's my logic on this. If he was going to come up with a story to cover for his misdeeds and say it was, you know, everybody's saying it's tainted, they're cheaters, all that stuff, right? That wouldn't be the story. That would not be the story at all that you'd come up with. Why, you know what I'm saying? Like that, this, what he told everybody is something that you would say if that was the truth, because to me, that's it. I just don't understand why, you know, he had all this time to think about it, right? Before he's facing the media and coming up with a story. And I just, to me, it was believable. Now, I'm probably a sucker. Sometimes I maybe believe people a little bit too easily. You're nodding your head. Okay. It's a personality flaw. I like to believe people.
I think you're perfect, Jeff.
Oh, thank you.
I don't think you have any flaws.
Oh, well, that's lovely. Thank you. But I just feel like, I don't know, when it, for those of you who watch his news conference, or heard it, whatever, I think you should. It was very compelling. I mean, I don't know. Again, maybe I'm a total sucker. I know, I recognize that not very many people believe that, but
they get they deserve the benefit of doubt. Like, let's just say that, like, Joseph has always been very upstanding and he's involved in these kind of things. And Penske is not an organization that is going to kind of push the envelope in that area. That's just not who they are. They like to look for the quote unquote unfair advantage, but they do it within the rule book. Like, they don't go beyond that. So their track record suggests they do deserve the benefit of the doubt. And you're probably more right. It's just, it's in this situation. It's like, how do you have this kind of oversight, you know? And how, as a driver, do you not realize, well, wait a second, like, what? You should know the rules, and to sit there and cite the rules. So that's where I struggle with. But at the end of the day, I probably do lean more with you. But I look at this and I'm like, he had to know to some degree. Whether it's like, what is it? What's the saying? Blissful ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, he says that's kind of what it feels like. He knew what he was doing, like with pressing it, and knew he was getting speed, and just.
Yeah, and no one else is doing that either. Like, you know, like, so, well, it's like
they couldn't. I mean, he didn't know that, but right.
Yeah.
Like, but
yeah.
But the other thing, so too, is just, like, how mind boggling is it that this was not being checked? Like,
yeah. Like, you could just go in and like, you do a cheat code and like up, down, down, left, right, BA select start. Oh, hey, by the way,
we can push yourself the pass on restart. It's not part of inspection.
Yeah.
Like huh? Anybody could have done it. And
they did. And that's the thing too, is like, it took them, was it Sunday morning when they discovered it? So it was after qualifying at Long Beach, if I have it right. And again, I, you know, not my beat per se. So I don't.
Yeah.
Like, but so like you were using it through then too. So it's like, I have so many questions about this. Like, there's just, it's very fascinating that you can just go in there and like perform a hack and like, oh, by the way, we got more, push the pass.
Yeah. I was asking a bunch of drivers about it here. Because I thought it was very interesting that, you know, I feel like to some degree in NASCAR, when stuff like this happens, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, and people would be like, oh, they got nailed. But, you know, but it's a different culture there. But at the same time, you know, I think it was Larson that made the point of like, if somebody hacked like the ECU in NASCAR, I mean, that would be like the death penalty type stuff. Right. So, I mean, and I think Austin Cindric as well here, we were talking, he said, there's really no comparison to the normal NASCAR stuff that this was, you know what I mean? This is, it's the area that they were working in. It's not just like, you know, it's not just that you found something, and it's just a totally different conversation really. So I think that's probably why, but it's quite fast. We'll see if it helps IndyCar's ratings.
Well, I was gonna say, all the help they can get, to be honest with you. Like, yeah. So, I mean, people are talking about IndyCar this week when they otherwise wouldn't be. I mean, it was, you know, on ESPN.com, it was a main story on there. Like, when does that happen outside the Indy 500? Like, it doesn't happen. So it's interesting. I know this is going to sound very hypocritical in a way. Like, I applaud crew chiefs in NASCAR for their ingenuity in playing outside the rule box, as long as you don't mess with like tires and engine fuel, like that kind of stuff, right? Like, I thought the Joey Logano glove thing was like, damn, like that's, you know, that's creative. I really applaud that. But this feels different to me though. This feels like an engine or a fuel or a tire thing of like, you're not playing outside. You're not playing in that gray area of the rule book and you're kind of getting away with it. Like, this is a straight going in there and changing the code and you know, not changing. Oh, we forgot to change it back. Sorry, our bad.
That's fair. I think that's fair. Well, before we move on and wrap things up, I do want to talk about the Xfinity race because there was a couple of cool storylines that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you have Ryan Truex winning again and for the second straight time, his second career win, both at Dover. You know, last year when he won at Dover, it was like, oh, cool, maybe he can parlay this into a full-time ride. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. He's only raced, I think, six times since then up until Saturday. So, you know, and the way he seemed very proud of this one, because the way that he did it was, it wasn't with the best car, right? Like, and he hung in there where last year he dominated and it showed like, hey, if you got a fast car, you give me a fast car, I can go win with it. Right. This was, hey, you can give me a fast, okay car, fast car, but not the fastest. And I can still go win with it. Now he had to have some things happen. Austin Hill spins on the restart. Carson Kvaatpol maybe picked the wrong lane. I don't know. But ultimately Truex, you know, went in there and took the win. And, that's big for him. I really would like to see him in some full-time good equipment, because I don't think his story's done yet. You know,
I think he does. He's a much different driver than a few years ago when he had that full-time opportunity with colleagues to run the Xfinity series. Like, he seemed like he's kind of matured a little bit and you can see that in how he drives. And I thought Saturday was a perfect example of that. Like, you're in traffic, you have to work your way to the front and you've got to manage the race. And when the brakes go your way, you've got to take advantage of that. That to me shows a young driver who's learned and has put the time and the energy in to get better. And like you, I'd like to see what he could do with a full-time opportunity. I'm surprised that hasn't happened, but I also know the business model in the Xfinity series is bananas. And like, you know, you need funding. Like, and if you don't have sponsorship, it's really, really hard to get one of those big rides. And that's unfortunate, but you know, the best thing he can do is to take advantage of the opportunities that he has. It's kind of like a Josh Berry, right? Like, Josh Berry didn't have a full-time ride, but when he was in the car, he was maximizing it. And like, he got that win at Martinsville for that first career Xfinity series win. He wasn't a full-time driver, but that kept his name out there and it showed people and it gets that ball rolling. Maybe I'm optimistic here, maybe overly so, but I feel like that's going to be the case with Ryan, you know, of like, hey, you know, I'm doing this. I've shown you, I can do this. I deserve that opportunity. And hopefully a company comes along and says, hey, I want to be associated with him. We're going to back and support that. So kudos to him. And I think, you're going to talk about Carson next, I presume.
No, I was going to talk about Anthony Alfredo, but what do you want to say about Carson?
I was just going to say Carson Kvaatpol, a standout performance, like second Xfinity series start, back-to-back top fives. Like, that was a young kid who never really raced on a track. He's never raced on a mile track before, and like go out there and do it, like really impressive. And there are a lot of people really, really high on him on the Cup side who are like looking at him going, man, that's a kid we want in our team. He showed why he's one of the top prospects out there.
Man, I tell you what, there's so many good young kids coming along.
So many.
Pretty exciting. There was a time there where you're like, oh, what's the future really? You know, it just didn't feel like there was like a ton of super exciting prospects or something, but suddenly there's just like so many. So, I mean, even you look at Corey Day, you know, the dirt standout, he's, you know, young kid from California. And he gets into a JRM late model the other night at Hickory and goes and wins with it. And making the transition from dirt to asphalt is not easy for guys who have just been dirt racers. And so there's another one right there.
Yeah.
Connor Zilich, people like that. Brent Cruz.
Corey Heim.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of exciting talent coming up. But yeah, I wanted to talk about Anthony Alfredo real quick, just because, and I'd like to hear your ideas if you have one. So what struck me about like Anthony Alfredo winning the Dash for Cash, right? Like usually I don't even really care that much about Dash for Cash in a sense, because it's like, that's cool. Like some, you know, one of the big teams already got it and that's a nice little thing for them, but okay. But like when Ryan Sieg wins it and then when Alfredo wins it, right? Like it's so massive for these smaller teams, especially Xfinity, right? Like we already know they're not getting a ton of money compared to the Cup teams and it's a struggle. I mean, wouldn't it be cool if there was some sort of a program where only, and I don't know how you would do it, some sort of like a hard charger award, in a sense where it's like, this is a team that hasn't won over the past year or that wasn't in the playoffs or, you know, a full-time team that could like really use the money and let's eject it into the midfield essentially. Right. So like a Jeremy Clements type or, you know, a Seager and Alfredo. Now it just so happened that the circumstances,
a poor team award.
No, I'm not saying that a poor team award, but like, I mean, it just means so much more and goes so much farther in a sense. Anthony Alfredo was saying our motorsports has like 13 employees. They don't have any manufacturer support. They don't have any alliance. They don't have any sim. They don't have an engineer who could even run sim for them. And so they're showing up with their setups pretty much blind. And, you know, he's able to go get a top 10, regardless of winning the Dash for Cash, even to go get a top 10 at a place like Dover is huge for that team. So this is a great story. And the fact that he got $100,000 for that, obviously he splits it with the team, depending on what his contract says. But, you know, that kind of stuff is really, I love stories like that. I wish there could be more of that. And I think it would help people focus on, you know, the midfield as well. Like if you knew like, oh, wow, you know, here's, again, like a Jeremy Clements versus an Alfredo versus whoever, and they're going for it. And this means so much to them. And like, you'd almost be watching that as much as you're watching the battle for the lead. So I don't know. Any ideas?
I mean, it's a great story. I agree. And it'd be great if those teams had more opportunities to earn awards like that and get my, I don't know how you institute that. I don't even know how you begin to, you almost have to like, you know, do you have to say, hey, how many employees do you guys have? Okay, you've got 100. Okay, you're in this tier. You've got 13. Okay, you're in this tier. I don't even know how you discern and separate everybody and do that. That's interesting. I mean, it's a great story. And it's great to see those teams have those moments in the sun. You know, like when Jeremy Clements, you know, wins at a Road America, you know, and gets that, you know, upset win. And, you know, it's incredible. But I don't know how you... I don't know how you classify that in opportunity, you know, to do that. I mean, the only thing I can think of, it goes back to what's always been talked about is like, you just would like to see some of the teams get more money and, you know, and if they can get more money, then perhaps they could do something, especially in the Xfinity series where it's really the economic model there is just, it's a mess. Like it's all like, if you don't have a sponsor, you know, you're running in the red. That's just how it is. And at least on the Cup side, you can have opportunities to, you know, kind of make it a little bit if you have success and you've got some business to business opportunities or whatever, but Xfinity is different. And I don't know how you change that to make it more well-rounded where those teams have opportunities to run with the big dogs.
Before we go, a couple quick items. First of all, please support our work on The Athletic. We've gotten some nice tweets recently from people who are podcast listeners who said, you know what, I decided to sign up and subscribe, give you guys a chance to do that. So we really appreciate that. We've been working hard on some articles that are coming up. Can we talk about the charter one?
I think we can talk about if you're comfortable talking about it on Tuesday, the one that's coming out Monday or Tuesday this week.
Yeah, basically, I mean, we're still reporting, but I guess we can just say we've talked to over half the teams. and we have asked for a sense of where the charter negotiations currently stand and what some of the issues are. And we will have a full report on that Tuesday, or I think Tuesday. Is that fair to say? I mean,
yeah, I think it's you're going to want to read the story. We put a lot of time and energy into this one. I'm very proud of it. You did all the work, by the way. So I'm riding your coattails in this one.
All right. Yeah, sure. That's something I think you guys will want to read, and people will
be. If you're not a subscriber, you're going to want to subscribe to read this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way because I think we have some interesting info in there, but
yeah,
I don't want to, you know, yeah. Anyway, so yes, theathletic.com/NASCAR mm-hmm. is where you'll be able to find that. And then I guess I just have to close with an apology.
Oh, can we do one thing really quick?
Okay.
You were there for it. Can we talk about Brad Keselowski's quote?
Yeah.
How uncomfortable were you? Oh, so the quote was Brad Keselowski on the injured Eric Jones having to watch someone else drive the number 43 car this week. I've never seen somebody sleep with my wife, but I imagine that's what it would be like.
Yes.
Did you just like turn like 50 shades of red?
No, I mean, everybody laughed. I thought it was funny. He was trying to be funny, but I'll be honest.
I know how uncomfortable you get though in these situations.
My discomfort was seeing all the people that went crazy with it in the mentions. There was a lot of people read into that comment quite a bit. And now I've had to read everybody's takes on all these things. I know there's children listening. So...
immediately when I saw that though, I immediately thought of our friend NASCAR Cats, and I'm like, this is like gold for him. He's got this, and he came through. So kudos to him.
Yes. Well, anyway, it reminded me that Twitter is not just necessarily
it's so uncomfortable.
No, it's not that. It's just, I mean, in the old days, it would have been like, haha, that was a pretty funny quote, or that was a funny joke. But now people are like, yeah, again, there's children listening. So I'll just leave it at that, but you can imagine what the replies, people really got into the replies in a, I think some people need help, but anyway, I wanted to apologize to you because
thank you.
I made fun of you at the end of last week's episode for your lack of Taylor Swift knowledge. And I could not believe that you've never heard a Taylor Swift song all the way through before.
Willingly,
and that you could not name three Taylor Swift songs because everybody, if you live on this earth, would know that, right? However, as the replies said this week to me, I was wrong. They're telling people, our listeners are tweeting at me saying you're wrong. The majority of the replies of people who bothered to tweet anyway were like, hey, I'm with Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know any Taylor Swift songs. One person said, which again, I find so hard to believe, but I guess you people are out there. Somebody said, if Taylor Swift walked up to me on the street, I wouldn't know what she looked like. I'm like, how? I just don't understand. Like, she's everywhere.
I would even say like, I would know who Taylor Swift is. Like I watch enough football games. Like you can't mistake her, but, yeah, put a gun to my head though. And they say, name three Taylor Swift songs. It's like, well, it was nice knowing you.
Okay. Well, anyway, I was wrong. Okay. I admit that. So,
thank you. Appreciate that.
And I'm not going to bore everybody with an update on the J. Cole Drake thing, but I just want to let everybody know.
Are they beefing?
Drake has now released his diss track.
I thought they made up.
Kendrick Lamar. No, that was J. Cole. J. Cole released a diss track, then went on his concert and said, you know what? I shouldn't have said that. I didn't sit well on my heart. So I take it back. I'm sorry. I'm going to take it off the streaming services. But then Drake said, I don't care. I'm going to go even harder. And he destroyed Kendrick in his. So people have to pick a side.
Why?
I'm on
Do we have to pick a side?
Yes. It's like the Avengers World War type thing.
Never watch any of those movies either, by the way.
I haven't either. I just know about it. Again, it's not a kind of, yeah. Pop culture. Just it, you. Anyway, everybody.
I'm busy doing charter reporting. Okay.
Next week you get Miami Jordan.
Yeah.
The version of Jordan that he loves the most. Wearing his bizarre clothing in a place where
it's not bizarre, everybody's wearing stylish. Bizarre.
Stylish. Okay, sure.
Stylish.
And he will be in his element. He will be so happy because nobody will be judging his apparel in Miami when he's walking.
Right. Like I actually, it's so nice to actually go to a race weekend and like I'm wearing something and I'm like, damn, like not only do I fit in, I'm like, maybe I'm even underdressed a little bit. Like it's so weird. Like you got the sharp jacket, you got the sharp shoes, you look good. I'm like, I feel fresh, you know, I feel good. And I look around, I'm like, I need to up my game a little bit.
Anyway, I will be far away from Miami and the F1 world in Kansas, having some barbecue, not wearing my flamingo shirt. But we will try to do, I don't know how exactly we're going to do this or when we're going to do it next week, especially the live stream part. If you can crash into Mike McDaniel's office in Dolphin Stadium or Hard Rock Stadium or whatever and try to find, see if he has good Wi-Fi. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, hit up Mike and just see if he'll let you have his office.
But, I'll text him.
Okay. Anyway, so we'll probably be back with you guys. But in the meantime, thanks as always for listening, and we will talk to you next time on The Teardown. See you, everybody.
Check out Dirty Mo Media. Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.